Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
Hey, Bill, before we start the sports guys, and this is Bill Wolfson and Pat Smits, two of your sports guys.
Good afternoon, folks.
Let's talk a little bit about this change in the weather, because I know that last weekend you probably were down at your boat enjoying great weather, correct?
I sure did. It was nice and hot. We didn't go out. We did a lot of maintenance work and a lot of cleanup work, so I'm hoping the birds stayed away from the boat. As a dedicated Temple University alumni, I can tell you we have a fake owl that we leave on top of the boat to scare away the birds, and the last time I was down there, a seagull was actually standing on the owl's head, though.
Okay. Well, I don't know how much you've been out. It was so windy near Round Valley Reservoir that all the plants on my deck were blowing over, and it was really windy. Doors blew open. And
yeah, we have a front coming in tonight, and this last night we had some rain. The wind that has begun to come in, you'll notice, is clocked around and is now coming probably out of the north from what I could tell. And it's certainly rustling the leaves because I can see them right outside our studio window. But we're going to see some rain off and on tomorrow, but Sunday's going to be a real nice
day
out here.
Well, that's what they say, mostly cloudy tomorrow in the morning, and then only a slight chance of rain. High is going to be about 77, which should be 5 or 6 degrees warmer than today. And you're right, there's a 50% chance of showers on Saturday night. But Sunday is mostly sunny and expecting a high of about 80 degrees. So
that's right.
The day to get outside and do things will certainly be Sunday. Again, partly cloudy on Sunday night, mostly sunny on Monday, and then a very slight chance of showers on Monday. But if you have the day to do something outside, it's going to be Sunday. And so for those of us who are going to be sitting inside watching football, we would always hope that, Saturday is better than Sunday. Now, one of the things that
I'm in luck for this weekend because the Eagles play the Falcons 8:20 Sunday night in Atlanta. So I get to go down the shore and come back by 8 o'clock just in time for a kickoff.
Well, you know, sometimes what we will do is on Sunday, my kids say, don't say tape. You don't tape anymore. DVR the game. And then make sure that we don't turn a radio on, we don't answer a phone, we don't look at the regular television until we're ready to watch the game. And the nice thing about that, if you're busy and it's a nice day on Sunday, you can basically watch the game in an hour, a little bit more, because you can skip through all the commercials.
That's a good thing. And all the timeouts and everything else. You know,
well, the timeouts are too hard to... If you try to skip that, it's a little bit too difficult. But certainly the commercials, and frankly, if you ever see once in a while, Aaron Rodgers will be on a commercial, so I can stop it and watch the commercial.
Okay, well, I understand that, Pat. But, you know, I watched a football game on Sunday very late in the afternoon. I forget which one it was because it was forgettable. And there were more, I think it was a little bit of the Giants-Dallas game, which was not a good game, obviously, unless you were a Dallas fan.
Oh, and I disagree. I watched that game.
And I said to myself, there are more and more commercial interruptions. It disrupts the flow of the game.
That's
for
true.
Me. It takes away a lot of the pleasure. Now, Saturday, Temple is hosting Maryland in Philadelphia at Lincoln Financial Field. I'm not going to be able to watch the game, but I'm going to record the game so that I can get at least some sense of it, because I have people to see at 11, and I've got a pile of work to do because I couldn't get to this week because we had two transactions, which is unusual for me. And we've had a lot of new people come in as well. So I plan to record the game And sometime around 4 o'clock after I get home from work and I have done all the things my wife wants me to do that I have been studiously avoiding to do all week in order to keep clients, judges, and other lawyers happy, I will probably be able to watch the game around 6 o'clock.
And not only that, I'm not sure that there'll be lots of news broadcasts that you will hear the score beforehand. And I have to tell you, once you do that, I think you're going to get hooked on trying to DVD the games and watch them later. And, of course, for us, one of the reasons we have the only reason we got satellite initially was because otherwise we couldn't get all the games. So we do get all of the games. But I disagree about the, the game, the Giant-Dallas game. Now, granted, the Giants couldn't have been happy, but what I was amazed is, Dallas is really putting it together. I was surprised to see that I didn't realize that Jason Witten is back.
He's back with Dallas.
They have Randall Cobb from the Packers, which I was very disheartened when Randall Cobb left the Packers. I know he was fragile, and everybody said he's fragile. He won't last that many games, but he really made a difference in the game. And, of course, Ezekiel Elliott, a favorite of the Dallas fans, he also, may not have done as much as he often does in games, but he was really, out there and good. What I didn't quite understand and still don't is why people are so down on Eli Manning. Because, frankly, it wasn't that Eli Manning was doing a bad job, in my view.
He didn't have anybody to throw to, and the O-line was not good.
Exactly. So I don't know how you can blame Eli. And I know they think they have a franchise quarterback in their new rookie, and it may be. But as you know from so many things I've said over the years on this program and just said over the years, I see it beneficial to a rookie to be able to sit on the bench and watch what's going on. I know that Carson Wentz came in quickly, but, I'm not so sure he wouldn't have been better off if there had been a good quarterback that he could have backed up.
Well,
and
remember
what's happening
that Carson Wentz spent a year watching Michael Vick.
He did, but he only spent a year. And so I'm not so sure, 2 and 3 years. Now, of course, Packers had the dilemma when Aaron Rodgers was sitting on the bench and they were going to lose them if Brett Favre came back. And, we won't go into that fiasco. But I have to say, I have to believe that Aaron Rodgers became a better quarterback with, working with the team without being the quarterback for all those years. And I'm not going to go back to we talked last week about the Bears and Packer game. And, of course, this week they have to face the Vikings. The other game, did you see any part of the Detroit game?
No, I watched Eagles-Washington off and on, and the first half the Eagles looked like they needed to get the rust knocked off because they spotted Washington 17 points, and then in the second half they were the good old Eagles.
Well, I mean, it was amazing because I did watch the first half of the Eagles game, and I thought, I'm not an Eagles fan. I'm not really a fan of either team. I was kind of watching because of two of my grandchildren who are Eagle fans.
Oh, I thought you watched them because I like them.
Oh, yeah. I like you, but I wouldn't watch the Eagles.
Not but
you
like anyway, me that much. Okay.
I came in fourth quarter, and I couldn't believe that the score was,
32 to 27? 23,
or 23 or 24.
27,
yeah. Any event, it was in the couldn't believe that the Eagles had come back. And what did they do in the second half?
Well, here's what happened. Once DeSean Jackson got that first touchdown in the first half, he is a talented guy. He's a more experienced guy now that he's back with the Eagles, because remember, he was in Buffalo for a while and in Washington. And this is his happy place. He and Carson Wentz seem to have developed some chemistry. And he has the ability to run away from a defender underneath the ball and put on that extra bit of speed and just bring it in. Now, he's 30 years old. I would have thought he might have slowed down a little bit, but no, that doesn't seem to be the case. He's managed to be, I think, a better possession-type receiver. He's got all the tools that you could possibly ask for in a guy who makes his living catching passes. The other one who had a good game, who was sort of an unsung hero, there are two of them, Nelson Aguilar. Nelson right. Aguilar saved three drives by wow. making catches of anywhere from 5 to 8 yards and then on third down and then getting that first down. Additionally, Zach Ertz played an excellent game. You got very good offensive line play from the Eagles in the second half.
And that is so important. I don't know why anyone underestimates, if you have that protection and that line and that protection and the quarterback has some time, especially it seems to me that Wentz often needs a little more time.
Sure. And I have to tell you, Pat, one of the advantages of having TVs that are literally the size of Indiana is that if you get a better sense of a line play and the battles that are going on and just how skilled these guys have to be. You know, people think linemen are not too swift and they're just big guys and they're there to just get in the way. No. There are multiple blocking and attack schemes. There are multiple battles that become basically the whole saga of a game. That's why I think watching the line play is the most fun for me in football. It's not just a bunch of, like my wife says, big guys knocking each other down.
Oh, no. There's a real strategy. And sometimes what I like to do is just for a few plays, watch one player just to see what he's doing.
Yeah.
I mean, the most fun that I think one of the really fun players to watch in the day was Reggie White, because you could see him with the strategy. He just had a strategy and he was in there every time. But going back to Randall Cobb, one of the things that impressed me so much is how he would get away. You would think he wasn't going to make that first down, and somehow he would spin around, evade tackles, make the other guy look like a jerk, and make that first down. I was really impressed with him, and I was hoping that the Packers were watching, because I'm not sure. I know he was a free agent. At least, yeah, he was a free agent. He wasn't traded by the Packers, as far as I recall. I may be wrong. But if he was traded by the Packers, they're really stupid. If he was a free agent, I think they didn't want to pay him, and Dallas was willing to pay him. And, of course, the interesting thing is I'm wondering at what point, and I don't know, some of our listeners would know, at what point did Jason Witten decide to give up broadcasting and come back to play?
I guess he needed the money.
Who oh, knows? Come on. I don't think he needed the money, but he's the guy who I will never forget. I have to tell you this story. I did say it a few years ago. When we went out to Wisconsin and we took our grandson with us, and we were eating in Appleton at the Lombardi Steakhouse. By the way, folks, if you're ever out in that area, you have to go see Lambeau. I was talking to someone last night who said that he went out, a giant fan, he went out to Lambeau and just couldn't rave enough about it. But great place to eat is the Lombardi Steakhouse in Appleton. And when we were there a couple years ago, that was where the Dallas was staying. So, you know, we got there to eat dinner, and all of these fans, there probably were 100 or more Dallas fans that were there. So anyway, we went in. Our daughter was with us, our grandson, and we were sitting there, and all of a sudden, our grandson Dylan jumped up and ran, you know, ran to where the bar was. Well, what had happened is Jason Witten had been walking by the door. He saw someone at the bar sitting there with his jersey on. So he came up to say hi. And, of course, I mean, the guy probably had almost had a heart attack. But anyway, our son, our grandson is there.
You know, we've got some exciting stuff coming up, Pat. I appreciate the family story.
Okay, we won't tell the family story.
You've got your hated Vikings at your beloved Packers.
I know.
On Sunday.
I know.
I think what we need to watch for is see the Packers try to run the ball against the Vikings. And the Vikings are a top 10 defense, even though the Bears are good. But they were only averaging 2.1 yards a carry against the Bears. I don't think the Packers are going to run 38 times in the game.
Well, in fact,
Matt
I think
LaFleur seems to be focusing on the run, though.
I don't understand why. I don't understand why.
A guy like Aaron Rodgers, why are you focusing on the run?
Exactly. And why are you doing it for the first two downs, and then everybody knows that and anticipates a pass on third down, you know, if you have any yardage left to make at all? I mean, you know, unless it's 3-1 or maybe 3-2, you know, if you've got 3-7, 3-8, you know they're going to pass. And I don't understand LaFleur from that standpoint.
Yeah. I'll tell you the matchup that I would watch if I were home on Sunday would be see how Minnesota's cornerback Xavier Rhodes covers Davante Adams. Davante Adams, a talented guy, and Rhodes was the closest guy to Adams on 16 targets last year, which Adams turned into 12 receptions, 124 yards, and two touchdowns.
Yeah, no, Davante Adams is in some ways one of the only guys out there. In other words,
I think he's Rodgers' only target.
Well, that's
what
the
happens
problem.
If they double team him? Where does Rodgers throw the ball?
Well, that is, that's really the problem now. The Packers, I think, for the first time when they played the Bears, showed that they had some defense, which was great. But Rodgers needs, as he always had, you know, and Favre also, they need three guys that they can, you know, play the field and keep any other team from knowing what they're going to do. And that was why I always loved Donald Driver, even in the more recent years, because he was always out there, he was always a threat, and if they kind of ignored him, then that's where the ball would be thrown, and he would take these long passes and very often make that touchdown or get way down so somebody else could make a touchdown the next time around.
Yeah.
So you're right. I don't know who else at this point.
I think the reason LaFleur is focusing on the run so much as he knows Davante Adams is getting double-teamed and they're going to have to find another way to move the ball.
Yeah, but then they really do need to find someone. And that's why, you know, why in the world didn't they keep Cobb? Why didn't they find some way to keep Cobb in that lineup? But you're right about the run game. And in some ways, people said, well, it was just that Chicago had such a good defense.
But remember something. The Packers got to Trubisky four times, four
right.
sacks. It wouldn't surprise me if Cousins and Rodgers each got sacked four times on Sunday. What do you think?
Well, I thought that all I can say is the Packer defense looked a lot better against Chicago. I don't like the fact that Rodgers is still getting sacked. Do you really think the Vikings' defense is as good as Chicago? Because everybody had always said that Chicago has the best defense. And talking about defense, why don't we play some spots from our sponsors? And that way, if John manages to come on time. On time for John is usually 5:30.
John's a very fair man. He always gives a plane or train a chance to get away.
So let's play some spots, and then we'll go back to talking if he isn't here. Or if he's here, he'll energize both of us.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design.
This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Folks, we're back. We've got John Manfredo with us, and John is gracing us with his presence. And I know he's itching to tell us about the Giants and who their opponent for this week.
The Buffalo Bills.
The Giants should do to the Bills what the Jets should have done to the Bills last week.
Well, it's early in the season, Bill, and you don't know. That was a very unfortunate loss for the Jets. They won the turnover battle 4-0, and I think they ran some stat, and like when you get 4 more turnovers than the other team, it's like
you should
97
win.
Point something percent likelihood you're going to win. But the Jets found a way to creep into that 2 point something and lose that game. That was a heartbreaker.
SOJ, same old Jets. You know, the thing that we like so much about the Jets is that this is the team that puts the fun in dysfunctional, and they never fail to disappoint.
Say something and see if it's
Do you know that the
up.
Jets and the Bills are going to have a tough time? The Jets are going to have a tough time this weekend when the Browns come in. Nobody wants to show up. If you look at StubHub and some of these other places for buying tickets, you can see the game for $18. I don't know what's going on with our New York Jets, But fans are suddenly dumping tickets, and it's only game two. So the Jets really need a win this weekend. But, John, let's get back to the New York Giants. Are they getting better this weekend? Are they getting well,
well
against the Bills?
Well, Bill, I don't think their fortunes are going to increase that substantially in 1 week. But you have a season that has a lot of promise, but by the same token, a lot of raw talent there. I think the end of the game foretold the future when Dan Jones came in the quarterback. Oh, with a couple of minutes left in the game, he did fumble when he got hit. But I think that's pretty much the story that you will likely see Jones in there relatively soon. I think you may even – they've been talking about week 8, week 10. You might even see him sooner than that. Not that Eli is playing that poorly.
He's not getting a protection from the O-line. Yeah, that's for absolutely sure.
I think we may have a problem with one of the mics. Can you hear me?
I don't have
I
the,
can hear you.
I don't
put
know
the headphones
where, I don't
on.
Where,
okay,
look,
let's
look
find
at what
out.
We have in front of us. I have no way of knowing where.
Bill,
I can hear. I can hear myself.
Can you hear me, Bill?
I can hear you, but not as loud or as clear as I'd like, but these headphones are working. We've got a whole pile of headphone cable here. It looks like a bunch
and
of spaghetti.
Can you hear me through the headphones?
I can hear you.
Okay. So, John, come on and use this mic.
Okay. So. Well, I'm going to take these off because I don't need the technical difficulties.
I think I have it working.
Meanwhile, the one thing I do know about the New York Jets is that you're having a they have a quarterback who's come down with mono, so we're going to see a true unknown, and I'm hoping for a Cinderella story where this guy plays out of his head.
What is the detail on that?
Sam Darnold came down with mononucleosis. They call it the kissing disease when I was in high school, but when I had mono, it wasn't because I got kissed. I was 15. The Jets are going to turn to Trevor Siemian to save them from an 0-2 start.
Trevor Siemian.
Yeah. The Greg Williams coach defense is going to have to play very well to beat Baker Mayfield and Odell Beckham, who will probably be wearing his fancy wristwatch. Beckham, as you know, has stirred the pot here, and now we have an interesting storyline.
Let's see if we can hear
John. Bill, are you switching to Odell Beckham Jr.?
Oh, yeah.
I just want to make sure I can follow you.
Okay, Odell Beckham Jr., of course, is accusing Greg Williams, of teaching his players how to execute dirty hits. Williams, fired by the Browns last season, is supposed to have a chip on his shoulder, as New York safety Jamal Adams said. So, here's your prediction. Much like in last year's Bud Light Fridge game against the Jets, Mayfield dazzles under the lights with 3 primetime touchdowns. Cleveland's hype train gets back on track after a bad week 1 performance. And Odell Beckham embarrasses the Jets. And once again, I think the Jets go 0-2. And that's a bad thing for Jets fans, but it's a good thing for me because my brother-in-law and I are a bunch of cheapskates, and we're looking to go to Jets Steelers on December
22. You'd rather buy cheap tickets for a losing team than premium tickets for a good team.
That's exactly right.
There.
We're cheap.
By the way, I know somebody.
The Jets should be paying you to show up.
I know somebody.
I think we'll be
has,
the only people in the stands who are not playing.
Yeah, in fact, I know somebody who has season tickets who wants to sell those tickets, but not sure what he's asking for them.
But wait a minute. This game is in the Meadowlands.
It's in the Meadowlands. December 22.
December 22.
Jets Steelers, John.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Monday.
I'm talking Jets Steelers. December 22. My brother-in-law Lance and I are planning to go to that game, freeze our heads off, annoy our wives, and then we're going to get in the car the next day and drive all the way out to Perry County for Christmas. And a fun-filled family thing in the middle of nowhere in Pennsylvania, which is always my kick.
Well, you know, interestingly, did either of you, talking about the Jets, poor Detroit. I mean, I was really rooting for them. Did either of you see that fourth quarter? Because Detroit, they were ahead. They looked good all game. And at the end, it ended up going into overtime. I think there were two
overtimes.
They
wound up in a tie.
And they ended up on a tie, which is not the way to start the season. Especially because they really were looking good. Stafford was looking good. I thought the team was looking good. And, you know, I can't help, even though the Detroit is in, you know, the conference with the Packers, I just can't help but root for the poor old Detroit.
The underdog, yeah.
Yeah. For, of course, I remember a number of years where they had some very good players. And the
By
Packers
the way, Pat,
didn't.
I mean, this is a very interesting game coming up against the Vikings.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Give me your comments there. I mean, I think the Packers squeaked by the Bears who weren't ready. I think the Bears, it was much like last year, the Bears then went on to win 12 out of 15 games after they blew a 20-0 lead to the Packers. This game, in my view, was worse. Because the offense just couldn't get untracked. But Chicago will come back, and I still think they're probably an 11-win playoff team, unless they lose the season series within the division. I mean, they could easily get swept by the Vikings. You know, presumably they'll sweep the Lions and maybe split with Green Bay. But yeah, I think for the Bears to make the playoffs, they've got to, having lost that first game to Green Bay, I think and especially if they lose the second game to Green Bay, but they've got to at least split with the Vikings and sweep the Lions to get in the playoffs.
You know, frankly, I thought the defense looked better, and Bill and I mentioned a couple things, and that is, I don't know why LaFleur is trying to run the game that much. We don't know. I don't know if it's because the only guy out there is Davante Adams. I mean,
we
discussed
that
concern.
Before, and I think that's why the run game's being stressed.
Well,
but I don't know that Green Bay has that good of an O-line to open holes for a good running back.
But they're not going to use a run game. I don't think they're going to do that against the Vikings successfully.
They're not going to run on Minnesota that
they
way.
They won't. And
I think it's a big test because the Vikings' defense is very good. But bigger than that, I think the Vikings' offense is going to be very formidable for the Packers to stop.
Well, I think the problem is that Aaron Rodgers needs three good guys out there that he can throw to, because he's so good, he can always find someone if there's someone to find. And that's been the problem. So what I didn't really understand,
most teams, Pat, would settle for a one and a one A wideout. You're looking for three great wideouts.
Well, because for years there was, you know, that's why I love Donald Driver, and I think that he should have stayed longer.
And releasing Cobb, I think, was a big mistake.
Oh,
he looked really good in Dallas against the Giants.
Well, but did they release him, or he was a free agent?
I think he was a free agent.
That was my understanding.
But come on.
I wanted him to stay.
He could have stayed. If they wanted him to stay, they could have retained him.
I think that they didn't want to pay the money.
Well, of course.
There's no question that he's fragile. But what he did in that Dallas game, again, Bill and I talked about that to some extent. I mean, he was worth every penny that the Cowboys paid him. And then, of course, as I said to Bill, the fact that they got Witten back, they couldn't have expected that. And then Ezekiel finally signed his contract.
And Cooper is a home run threat.
And Cooper, yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's talk
about
it.
The Cowboys are looking good.
Oh, I think they're looking
good. They'll be 6-2, and then we'll see what happens the second half.
That's right. Remember, Dallas doesn't play the Eagles until later in the second half of the season. So it's going to be
both games? Very interesting. Well,
yeah.
Wait a minute.
Dallas does not play Philadelphia until later in the season.
Nor do
really?
The Giants.
Yeah.
There's a lot of divisional games in the NFC East that are in the last quarter of the season.
Really?
For some
because
strange reason.
They usually play one game early in the season and one game later in the season.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm not sure
division.
Why.
You had Philadelphia play Washington.
Weighted, they're weighted heavily towards the end of the year.
But it's heavily towards the end of the season.
Wow.
I think that's
the way Packers played Chicago, and now they're playing the Vikings the first two games, and then
I think it's just something quirky in the NFC East, the way it turned out. But, you know, it's interesting. The Eagles have the Falcons in Atlanta Sunday night.
I think it's a very tough game. The Eagles, on paper, should win that game. In my view, they were sluggish out of the box against the Redskins, and they were citing some statistics from last year that they have scored very few points in the first quarter all year. They're a team that's not getting off to a quick start. I think you play Atlanta in Atlanta, you get down to that team, a couple of quick strikes to their big receivers, you know, you're in. It was one thing to be in the hole 17-0 to the Redskins. You get 17-0 against the Falcons, and you're gonna have trouble. So, Bill, I think the key to that game is you gotta score a few points early. You can't get too far behind.
Well, you get down 17-0 to Atlanta. You better be the New England Patriots.
Well, that too. Yes,
okay,
very good.
But yeah. Very honestly, you know, the Falcons have not scored a lot in the red zone. They're against the Eagles. They're 2-9 on a red zone offense. Secondly, you know, the reason the Eagles beat Washington was because Wentz kept
playing Washington.
They were playing Washington. Wentz kept throwing home run passes to DeSean Jackson. Now, I think when Atlanta gets into their spread three defense, you're going to see Jackson double covered, which means they're going to give the pass underneath to Zach Ertz or to Nelson Aguilar, who can both keep drives going, as Aguilar and Ertz both did last
week. Yeah, the secondary receivers are going to be in a good position in that game, Bill. I agree with you there.
And, you know, also, I'm always one who looks at where they're playing. For example, the Vikings are coming to Lambeau this game.
That's always a tough game for Minnesota.
And
it's tough to play the Vikings. It's tough
to
play them in Atlanta.
Anybody in Lambeau. And remember, this is the first game.
It's a home
Packers
opener
went
from you.
To Soldier Field for
right,
the last
and they won
game.
A division game on the road. That was just a tremendous win for the Packers.
But also,
you and I talked all summer about how they might get off to an 0-3 start.
But one of the other things, and I did talk a little bit about this, is it is – I really want to go to Soldier Field. I've never been to that stadium. And Virginia McCaskey, can you imagine, 96 years old? She's probably seen more games. I think she's seen more games than any other person who's alive.
In history. Sure.
In history.
Sure. Yeah.
She goes to every Bears game.
Well, she's been going to the Bears game since
she was
4 years old.
Right. Since she was Hallis.
Yeah.
I mean,
you're talking 90 plus years of let's say it used to be 6 home games, then 8 home games. So you're talking, let's say the average is 7 times 9, 90 years. Do the math.
Yeah, right. But anyway, I do think that I'm keeping my fingers crossed for the Packers because they will be playing in Lambeau. Now, of course, we all remember the first time Brett Favre came back in that horrible
purple uniform.
Uniform. I don't even call it a uniform.
Yeah, remember, he was also on the Jets, too. So how much can you respect him?
Nobody minded. I've said this before. Nobody cared when he went to the Jets. Believe me, the Packer fans cared when he came in that purple people-eater dress that he came in.
The Packer fans just feel sorry for us Jets fans.
Folks, Pat won't even dignify that as a uniform.
She called it the purple dress.
Well, they're just trying to copy the Eagles now.
Well, purple, you know,
purple
snot
people
green.
Eater.
You know, those aren't my favorite colors now.
No, me neither.
Well, Bill, I have to hand it to you on the baseball side. Not only did the Red Sox have a tough year and are not going to make the playoffs, but they wound up firing the architect of their three consecutive AL East title and 2018 World Series winning team.
Yeah, were you surprised?
At the end of a 10-5 loss Sunday night. Well,
I don't understand that, John.
I think what was going on there is Dombrowski could have made some moves at the deadline. Ownership wanted him to, but I believe Dombrowski's philosophy was correct. He basically said, number one, I'm not going to get any top talent because nobody's going to part with that. Number two, so that means I'm going to get secondary talent. Number three, I'm going to have to pay a king's ransom for secondary talent. And number four, regardless of who we pick up, if the players who are not having good years, our stars, if they don't perform, it won't matter. And all four reasons were correct. All right? What the, they were in purgatory this year. You look at their stats.
Yeah, but it's
you got
one
guys
year.
In the middle of that lineup with over 100 RBI, several of them. The problem was they scored, they knocked in a lot of those runs in games when their pitchers gave up, you know, double-digit runs, or they were double digits ahead. Last year, the 2018 edition of the Red Sox, I can't tell because I saw every single game. They just hit in the clutch every single time, especially Martinez, okay? This guy had such a season last year, which is why I really thought he should have gotten the MVP over Mookie Betts. It was you had the two best players in baseball, certainly in the American League, on the same team. Either one of them could have got it. But Martinez, every time he came up with runners in scoring position, he knocked him in. This year didn't happen.
But that was then, and this is now. One thing I don't understand, John, is why didn't they pick up Keuchel?
Keuchel was a pitcher that was not going to make a difference. It certainly would have helped. But remember, at the trading deadline, Bill, they were already 10 games back, and I believe, but they were only 2.5 games out of the wild card at that point, and that is why he's being criticized. Not for the division. They gave up on the division in June. But by the end of July, when the trading deadline approached, they were only 2 games out of the wild card. And, you know, but I guess the advanced scouts' opinion was, you know, like Marcus Stroman that went to the Mets and Keuchel, they're not going to be enough to get you there. So why pay a king's ransom for them? I think Dombrowski made the right decision. Unfortunately, and the team is over. They're going to still finish with a decent record. It's just that when you win 108 games, you set the bar last year. Now you're going to win. You're going to win 90 games this year, which is a good year for any team. But it's 18 games less than last year. So it opened the door for the Yankees, who finished the season 13-6 against the Red Sox. Whereas last year, I think the Red Sox won that season series. I think it was 11-8.
I think you're right.
So it was a 7 or 8 game swing right there, head to head. But beyond that, you know, the Yankees are having one of those years that, I mean, you really have to give them credit with all of these enormous injuries. Now, is it luck that, you know, DJ LeMahieu, who nobody ever heard of, comes up and he's hitting, you know, just a ton, and all these young guys? But on the other hand, you got to give the Yankees credit for choosing wisely. This is no different than the Red Sox bringing up Devers and having him hit 25 homers, or a couple of the young players they brought. When you win, you make good decisions. You also get lucky.
Well, remember something. The Yankees picked up years and years ago Paul O'Neill, not a great outfielder with Cincinnati.
A mediocre middle-of-the-line player with the Cincinnati Reds.
And with the right hitting instruction, he helped them win a couple of World Series.
I think it was more they saw that with O'Neill, he had that great swing.
Right, but and it fit so, Yankee Stadium.
I think the big distinction, Bill, and as you know, O'Neill is a fiery guy. I always thought of him like a Lou Piniella, fiery guy. But they were great players because they could control it. Okay?
Oh, they definitely could control their passions.
And you are trying to judge, you know, 96 mile an hour pitches within inches. You got to be very, very, you know, focused on that. And I think the difference, Bill, with O'Neill, it's interesting you brought him up, is that he learned to control his tempo and play within himself, and he became not a great player, so not a Hall of Fame player, but a very good clutch player.
Well, it's the same thing with DJ LeMahieu, who has been back and forth, leading for batting average.
I think the difference is LeMahieu was still young, and they
he
knew
is.
He had a lot of potential. He had not had any breakout years because he had some injuries.
He was not playing regularly for St. Louis, whereas for the Yankees, they moved him all over the place.
Well, because they had to because of the injuries.
Injuries, exactly. And
so,
was that luck?
Was that smart or good coaching, or was that luck? It's a combination of
the three. It's good scouting, good coaching, some good luck,
and
a player
who said, I've got a passion. It starts with Cashman. He made the acquisition. Okay?
Yeah.
Starts with that. Then I don't give Boone much credit. You know, I hate Aaron Boone. But, I just don't like him. I think they're winning despite him. Just like last year, Alex Cora, who the heck ever heard of him? He was way down the depth chart on Terry Francona's coaching list in Cleveland. You bring him into Boston, he wins 108 games. Alex Cora didn't win 108 games last year. Look what he did this year. Okay, I could have won 108 games with that team last year, and I could be one. The Yankees will probably wind up about 105 wins. And I could probably do
how,
that
how
this
many
year.
More games are there for most
about
of 20, them?
15, 20 games.
15,
20 games,
maybe?
Yeah. See, the real problem with the Yankees is going to be in the postseason where they're going to either run into Houston or they're going to run into the team that scares me the most.
Oakland,
the Twins.
Cleveland. There are some teams with enough starting quality pitching.
They have quality pitching, whereas for the Yankees, the starting pitching has been mediocre all year.
Well, there's that, and the strength becomes the weakness. The strength of this Yankee team is the home run ball. They set another record they did last year. I mean, this is a team built with the launch angle that just is incredible, and they can muscle the ball out.
But there's an old adage in baseball, good pitching beats good hitting in the playoffs.
Almost every time. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So I think as much as deep a Yankee fan as I am,
You're being realistic?
I'm trying to be realistic about the
postseason. I think they still have a good chance, Bill.
Oh.
But I think to your point, it won't shock anybody if they lose the ALCS in six games or they win it in six games. It won't. You're talking a two-game swing there. And that's the thing. You know, that was the big fear at this time last year when the Red Sox were running away with the division and they won 108 games. And then when they started the postseason, everybody said, but you could lose. You got to play a five-game series here. You could. You have one or two bad games, next thing you know. And that's the thing about I got to tell you, that five-game first round.
Well, that's always a scary round. You never know what's going to happen.
You know, and that could bite them.
But to that point, Luis Severino just won a game for Trenton, Trenton
but, you
Thunder.
Know, Bill, again,
and they're
Severino,
bringing him up next week.
What he is going to be remembered for is losing 16-1 to the Red Sox. I don't think this kid, and he's a young kid with a big upside, a lot of talent, live arm. To me, I would not force this kid. You know, I would go with Tanaka, who's your best option, Paxton. They said Happ is going to be may not be on the roster, or if he is, he's not going to be in the rotation. I would maybe use Severino as my third starter. I certainly wouldn't play him if they're 0-2. The kid's got to prove himself. You know, you've got Jermaine, who, again, he's a 5-6 inning pitcher. He's going to be a 20-game winner on a team that launches the ball every time. You really don't know. Hard. You know what Houston's going to do. They're going to roll out Verlander and Greinke. You know that.
Oh,
you know what you're
absolutely.
Getting.
Absolutely. With Houston,
the Yankees,
sure.
I honestly think, Bill, you got to play it game by game.
Well, exactly. And actually, it's not even that you have to play it game by game. I think you have to play it pitch by pitch, particularly with a team like Houston, because one of the things the Yankees have shown that they can be good at is stretching out each at-bat. Although they hit a ton of home runs.
The Yankees, there's no accident the Yankees and the Red Sox, by far, like 15, 20 minutes on average,
longer games
than
absolutely.
Anybody else in Major League Baseball, which is why a Yankee-Red Sox game goes 5 hours.
Four or five
hours,
that's right.
Because both teams are the best at doing that.
Yeah, and remember, when you're waiting out pitchers, you're going to finally get your pitch. And the Yankees have preached self-discipline at the plate, and they've been lucky because every time somebody has gotten hurt, somebody else has managed to step up. The Greg Bird, Luke Voit thing. Now Luke Voit is hurt, so they've got DJ LeMahieu playing at first, and he's hitting 320, 324 last I looked. So you have, just like with the Eagles in their Super Bowl year, somebody gets injured, somebody else steps up.
And that's what it takes to win. Somebody steps up.
Especially at this level.
Somebody unexpected has a superb year. Everybody makes contributions, and you get a little lucky, and, you know, there you go.
Yeah, and that's what makes it so exciting because, you know, oh, my God, how are we going to do anything? You know, Carson Wentz just got his leg ripped up and his back clobbered by the Rams. Well, suddenly Nick Foles is there and takes the Eagles to a Super Bowl. Now, this is what I think is happening with the Yankees. Whether they'll get to be the World Series champs or not, I don't know, because somebody's got to play an excellent Los Angeles Dodgers team.
Yeah, that's a good point. You get past Houston, you still got the – I mean, and look, the Dodgers have lost two World Series in a row, and not only did they lose, but they were embarrassed last year.
The Dodgers have something to prove.
Houston embarrassed them, and the Red Sox thoroughly embarrassed them.
Right.
If you are the Dodger organization, yeah, you got to say, hey, guys, you want to do this 3 years in a row. They must – I agree with you, Bill. They have extra incentive, and I think if it's either the Yankees or Houston – they'll certainly be up for Houston, who pasted them 2 years ago, and they're always up for the Yankees. So, you know, I really think, and that's assuming they get there, and I think they will.
I think the Dodgers will, too. I like everything about them.
I'm hoping the Cardinals squeeze in the National League. You know, it's my favorite NL team.
Right, mine, too.
Been to St. Louis, really enjoy that organization. And,
yeah.
But how are the Mets? I know they've been...
The Mets are not a wild-card team yet. The Mets and the Phillies are each trying to take each other over the cliff.
I think that ship has probably sailed.
Yeah. I don't see the Mets making it.
Are they still in it, though?
I don't think they've been mathematically eliminated, but I think they're a long shot right now. I think they're like 4 or 5 games behind. Because they did well. They had that great stretch.
Right.
And then they lost 6, 7 games in a row.
Well, that's because Dave was in the hospital.
Well, perhaps.
They wouldn't have lost if he
had
not been in the hospital.
Yep, there you go. You never know. Karma is very difficult to deal with. So it's an interesting weekend of football as we draw to a close here. Interesting weekend of football. Some great matchups. Certainly the Vikings-Packers matchup in the NFC. Probably the game of the week in the NFC. I don't think there are any big matchups in the AFC. Maybe the Kansas City game. The Patriots are just playing Miami. You know what's going to happen there. To me, Pat, the NFC is just so much more exciting than the AFC.
Oh, I agree. I mean, you know, who can challenge the Patriots?
Yep, that's the problem over there. Yeah.
And if the Steelers can't do it,
exactly.
Is there
anyone else? The Steelers are done. They're cooked. They're done. Patriots exposed them in Foxborough last Sunday night. And, at this point, the real problem with New England is it is a veteran team. And they are poised to suffer some injuries, and I could see them not getting back. I think, but we say it every year.
I was
the run
say, that
is
sounds,
up
that's
every
always
year,
what
and somehow
we say.
This 6th-round draft pick manages to continue to stay on the field.
And there doesn't seem to be any other team that
it can
has
challenge
improved
them.
So much to challenge them. And I don't think they have to play. We know they don't have the competition that our teams have.
Well, remember something: when you play in the AFC East, you've got 6 gimme games to begin with.
Well, exactly right.
Yeah.
Well,
I've said that hundreds of times on the air here.
Again, is why I still think the NFC East is the best. You know, you've got all that competition there, and you've got 13 Super Bowls in that division. And if you look at the – if the New England Patriots were nestled into the NFC East, they'd have at most three Super Bowls, maybe even only two.
Well,
it's
and
a huge, huge difference. Yeah.
Well, they've
and
got the luck of placement in a weak division.
I mean, I remember watching Meet the Press with Tim Russett, and, you know, his Buffalo team was always a challenge. Most of those years, they really were. And, you know, Buffalo hasn't done anything for...
Well, that's the thing. In the Patriots have had this 19-year run.
Yep.
All right? Well, in the last 19 years, Buffalo, Miami, and the Jets... All right, the Jets made two AFC title appearances 2 years. Other than that, in the last 19 years, those three teams... I read this year that they have a combined winning percentage of under 400.
Are you kidding?
Yeah.
Really?
I mean the worst division in football. Oh, wait, it might be the AFC Central might be worse, but they're one of the top two out of the eight divisions, one of the top least performing. Talk about the AFC least.
Wow.
So we have a division of stumble bums and one great team. But, you know, nothing lasts forever. Remember that old Kansas song, "Nothing Lasts Forever But the Earth and Sky"? How long do you think the Patriots can keep this up?
We've been saying it for five or six years now.
We have. I remember what? When this was maybe 11 or 12 years and we were saying, oh, it's
the run is over. And that is the testament to Belichick. He's won with defense. Right. He's won with offense. He's won. The only constant has been Brady.
He's won with cheating.
Okay. That too. And that will tarnish their legacy.
And, you know, people were talking, and Ron Gronkowski is now saying he misses playing and he's thinking about coming back. And this
he
is after shedding 30
Jason
pounds.
Witten.
Pardon?
He sees Jason Witten on the field.
That could be. Wow. Julius Edelman had a very good game last week, in case you noticed.
Huh. Really, Gronkowski?
Yeah, Gronkowski
really
says
come
he's
back?
Coming back.
I don't think that's it. His legs are so bad, it would make no sense.
Well, you know, he shed a lot of weight. He's got a new training regimen. I read all
never
about
know.
It.
He may sit out the season. More likely, he'll sit out the season and try to come back next year.
Well, you know, there are a lot of Andrew Luck-type guys out there.
Their roster.
No, he is officially retired.
He's officially retired, but he can unretire. Folks, it's 6:01, and I'm going to wish everybody a great weekend and get up off that couch, especially Sunday. I'm going sailing.
Have a good weekend, everyone.
Yes, and we're surprised that they haven't cut us off, but... if they don't cut us off in a minute, we'll just do rewind.
We'll just boot us right out. So we'll just freeform it for a few moments. And I think we're
bonus
about to get
coverage,
cut off.
Folks.
But yep, the Flyers still have not signed Travis Konecny. One of my favorite
Freezing.
Players to watch.
USA Radio's Jason Wirt has the details.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell had some rather pointed words about the Senate Minority Leader when he appeared on Trending Today USA with Rusty Humphries.
At the height of the Iraq war in the middle of the surge, he says the war is lost. Well, what kind of message is that to soldiers who are out there fighting in the field?
McConnell also said President Obama acts like a child behind closed doors, telling everyone basically how much smarter he thinks he is than they are. I'm Jason Wirt.
The flooding in Texas claims the lives of soldiers. USA Radio's Anthony Lucero has been following that story.
The number of soldiers killed when a transport vehicle flipped over in Texas floodwaters now stands at 5. Rescue teams are continuing to search for 4 soldiers still missing at Fort Hood. A soldier's tactical vehicle overturned at a low water crossing at a creek on the Central Texas Army base. 3 other soldiers are in stable condition at a hospital.
NASA says it appears an asteroid buzzed Arizona, a bright fireball lighting up the sky for a few seconds yesterday morning. This is USA Radio News.
Hey, Pat, did you know between the two of us, we know how to screw in a light bulb?
Come on, Steve. We can do better than that. Well, at least I can. Tell you what, you sit there and look pretty, and I'll fix it.
Listen to you, big guy. Better yet, let's get everyone to listen to Home Sweet Home with me, Steve Bailey, Inspector with Brass Tack Home Inspections.
And I'm Pat Gregory, Handyman Extraordinaire with Taskman Home Improvements, every Friday at 11 a.m. Or you can go to our archives and get access to over 50 podcasts.